Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condo with a K, and I'm joined by Mr.
Ben Arrington.
How's it going, man?
You had a good. Good. Whenever you say
good weekend.
Whenever you yeah, it's been lovely. Whenever you say Condor with a K.
Yeah.
I imagine like a really posh upper class double barreled name.
Condor hyphen with a K.
Condor with a K. Yeah.
Like
Hello, I'm Condor with Mr. Condor with a K. Oh, here he comes.
Yeah, and they'd be like, so that's K O N no. C O N D O R with a K.
Just to confuse matters even more. Yeah, I'm good, man. I had a devil a year.
Not too bad. So it's basically Halloween weekend because Halloween lands on a Tuesday, which is when
it's Halloween weekend. But when if you're listening to or watching this episode, it is Halloween right now, 31st of October. Bang,
bang. But did you get to do anything special last night? Yesterday being the Saturday night of the Halloween weekend.
Do you know what? No, I didn't. I didn't do all that much at all. I accompanied my daughter to. She had a couple of Halloween get-togethers. She went to one in the daytime, one in the evening. She got a better social life than me. She was living it up.
Did you dress up?
I didn't dress up, no, because I say accompanied her. I accompanied her, and then I had to be gone because that was it. I wasn't needed. You know what I mean? It's like I'm at this party. I'm with my friends.
Extraneous. Yeah.
I've got a tiny little pony in my hand. I just realised that's weird. I am in my daughter's bedroom right now, and there's a lot of paraphernalia, ponies.
If you're watching the video feed, we Ben's in the pink room. We just had to sort of
just in case it looks like I'm just in a random child's bedroom. I've broken into a house and commandeered
a better internet here. Yeah,
a bedroom just for that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I didn't do anything. I haven't dressed up this week. It's the first I haven't done it in a couple of years actually. Dressed up and gone to a party. What about you? Did you do anything spooky?
I don't dress up really. I did it at uni. So what did I do yesterday? So I was gonna go to that thing in Derby, the Dead and Breakfast thing, but it's a bit expensive and a bit skinny. So
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, because that was like five horror movies overnight. You stay up all night and then you have like a breakfast thing in the morning. And I was like, okay, I'll do something like that on my own in my house. I was asleep at 10 o'clock. That's completely But like we carved some pumpkins. I've never carved a pumpkin before. I think I maybe did it once as a kid. The face of my pumpkin looks like, you know, when like a 5-year-old kid first tries to draw a face, like my pumpkin face looks exactly like that. Like it should be on a fridge or something. Like the eyes are kind of like wonky. It's got like ears.
I like it.
Yeah.
To be fair though, carving a pumpkin is incredibly difficult. And I think anyone who ever carves a good looking pumpkin, I tip my hat to them
because
I think
looking pumpkin. Yeah,
it's difficult. Like you've got to get all the gunk out, all the gunk's kind of all stuck in there, and then you've got to like carve with a knife. If you've got a shit knife, like it's a difficult scenario.
You need the tools.
I get a little bit worried. And if you've got a sharp knife, I constantly think I'm gonna die. I'm gonna slice my wrist or something. oh, and everyone would be laughing, going, oh, it's a Halloween prank. But then I'll just slowly, quietly pass away.
Dead. Yeah.
Now he's dead. What a great prank.
Yeah, and all like that, when you're ripping the guts out of the middle of it, it feels super weird. It feels very fleshy. They call it pumpkin flesh, don't they? It's not called pumpkin fruit, whatever you call it.
Pumpkin innards.
I don't want to
I don't want to eat pumpkin in any way after carving one. After I know what goes on in there, I never want to eat any.
Yeah. Okay, so then we watched a couple of episodes of Stranger Things, the new season, which has been really, really good. We're about halfway through now, and it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen about 4 episodes, I believe, so almost halfway
through. I think we've seen 5 now. But
all right. Yeah,
I watched the first episode and I'm constantly amazed at like how well they pull off the 80s thing without it seeming like a pastiche.
Yeah,
like it just seems so authentic. Yeah
all the little details, sorry, this is probably a spoiler, but there's a Head and Shoulders bottle of shampoo at one point. Major spoiler that is. It's not a key plot point, this bottle of shampoo. But yeah, they've recreated that. I was like, God, that's an 80s label, that is. I mean, they've really taken the time.
Yeah. I was a bit worried that season 2 was going to be a bit of a wet fart, but it's not. It's been good.
It's been a dry one.
It's been a bit of a dry one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird because I started watching this series and I had completely forgot. Because since the first series, it's become such a mainstay of like pop culture.
Yeah.
Like think about Life Before Stranger Things. It's weird. Like I remember seeing the trailer for the original series and thinking, that's quite cool. And now it's like it's everywhere and everyone loves it and everything's related. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost like one of those things, like the nostalgia for the 80s. Excuse me. Got a bit choked up there. The nostalgia for the 80s was always felt like one of those things that was like a bit of a niche. That like, oh yeah, we like all these little bits.
Simps.
All the simp wave. All these simps. And, oh yeah, I enjoy that. Yeah. But now it's such a sort of mainstream thing. Not, I'm not one of those people who thinks, oh, no, I liked it before everyone else. It's not one of those, but it just feels a bit like coming back to it in the second series. It felt a lot more magical than the first series. The second
have they
series
changed
that,
the,
it was like a huge deal, didn't it?
Have they changed the aesthetic a little bit in the second season?
I think so, yeah.
Or are we just more used to it? Because I remember when I watched the first season, I was like, wow, it looks so 80s. Like the camera filter, whatever they use on it, looks 80s. But now I'm watching it and thinking, it looks normal. Does that mean that everyone I've seen that filtered, that's stuff too much now for it to be special? I don't know.
I don't know how much of a filter was on the first series. I think now it just feels a lot. I don't know. Do you reckon it's a higher budget as well, maybe?
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say right now? I've not seen all of the season, but I'm going to say Stranger Things is better than It. It does what It does, it did, but better.
Okay.
You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It kind of, I can understand that. But I'll reserve my opinion until I've watched the entirety of the second series and see how I feel. Because right now, I think the jury's out. Like, I'm enjoying it. But so far, I'm only 4 episodes in, but so far, not in a bad way, but a tad predictable. There's a couple of things that have kind of happened. And I've kind of, not like I was going, hey, this is going to happen, guys. But like, a couple of things that have happened and I've kind of gone, oh, I bet that's related to this, and then it is, and then I bet that's this, and then it is. Like, not saying that's because I've powers of deduction, but I just think it is quite currently, it's quite easy to sort of see the way it's going to pan out. But then I'll reserve that until the end of the series, and I'm sure I'll be sure I'll be shocked.
Well, just so the last episode that I watched ended pretty like whoa, like that's. I was nervous. It was tense. I didn't know if this person was going to die or not. It was bad. It was tense. But I'll leave that with you. Yeah. And then we watched Night Before Christmas. I'm not too sure if that's a Christmas film or a Halloween film, but I fell asleep pretty quickly.
You fell asleep during the big musical numbers.
Well, I sang.
Luke Condor dozed off.
I sang all the way up to What's This? What's This? And I just sort of dozed off.
It's my pillow.
So comfy.
Okay. You can make a good Jack Skellington if you applied yourself to it on a Halloween, painted red.
Maybe I should do that. Yeah, I'm not quite gangly enough. Maybe I'll have to get some like longer arms and you know what I mean?
Stand on stilts and hold some long ground. That'd be great. Everyone will love you at whatever party you go to. Weird, gangly long man.
We were thinking of dressing Alaska up in a... Put like a little red nose on her, like a quilt, and make it look like the dog in it, Zero. I think it'd be quite easy.
Be good, and a quilt.
Yeah.
That could be cool.
So today's episode isn't your standard episode. This is a Halloween special. Normally we talk about a specific film and we deep dive and we spoil the hell out of it. Today we're talking about 10 horror moments that will stay with us forever. I think this was your idea, Ben.
So yeah, kind of. I think so. It's an amalgamation between the two of us. I was trying to think of like doing a horror list that like I haven't seen before. I mean, it is kind of like a standard horror list, but something that was a little bit different to, you know, top 10 gruesome monsters, top 10 something else.
Plus, it couldn't be like top 10 Halloween films because a lot of them are just going to appear in this list.
Yeah, exactly. We'd be either retreading old ground, or we'd be talking about films that, you know, we haven't even talked about on the list, which is going to be mental. So yeah, we're doing 10 horror moments that will stick with us forever. 10 horror memories.
Five each, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So I guess...
Not 10 each. That'd be overkill. You know what I mean? Yeah,
exactly. So I'll go first then. So my first horror moment that will stay with me forever is the first horror movie I ever rented. And I shouldn't have been allowed to rent it. I'm pretty sure it was an 18. It was from Impact
Video. Did you get away with
that? I don't know. Well, I went with my sister. She's 2 years older, so maybe she looked a bit old. I don't know. Maybe he added their ages together and was like, fine.
That's how it works, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, he's 12, she's 12 and he's 6. And,
I remember me and my sister Q, we went to the Impact Video, and then I think we'd seen all of the standard stuff. Gremlins, I think I'd seen so many times. Like, they were like, you can't have that anymore. Like, you've had your fill. And then we looked at the box art for Candyman, and then we like looked at each other and like said, shall we get Candyman? Shall we do it? And it was an agreement. It was like a pact. We were like, we're gonna do it. We're gonna watch a full on horror movie. Rented it. We were nervous when the guy gave us the horror movie to watch, and then we took it home, watched it in the middle of the daylight, and
You watched it in the middle of the day.
Yeah, yeah. I know if I watched that at night, I don't think I would be here today. I don't know where I'd be. Dead for some reason. I don't know.
He definitely would be dead. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way.
But so we watched it, and it's so when did you watch Candyman? Have you seen it? I'm sure you.
Yeah, I've seen Candyman, but I don't think I saw it when I was young. I think I saw it when I was like early teens or something like that. I think I've only ever seen it once. Yeah.
I think you should watch it again, like more soonish. It's held up quite well.
You should watch it more. You should watch it weekly.
At least get it on the schedule, in the routine. So we watched it, and it's just terrifying for like, I think, so I must have been 10 years old, judging by like when it was rentable. I shouldn't have been watching it because it's really brutal. Like, it's really quite gory. The whole thing in the film is you say Candyman in the mirror three times, and then they're always like, the way they do it in the film, they're looking in the mirror and they say Candyman, and then the lights come back on, and then he's just standing behind them and he sticks his hook in the back or something, and it's just terrifying.
Why is it called Candyman?
I don't know why
that's stuck to my head.
It's something to do with the fact that they put honey all over him or something, so the bees killed him, like the bees or stung him to death.
Delicious.
Like, I can't remember. It's actually based on like a Liverpool thing of some guy who everyone ganged up on and killed, even though he didn't do the crime.
Because Clive Barker's involved. Wasn't he like a producer on it or something?
He wrote the short story that it was based on.
Oh, right. Okay, so it was based on a short story. Oh, right, great. I never knew that.
It's from his Books of Blood. I think it's volume 4 or volume 5. But, it's such a scary film. And so that night, I couldn't sleep. This was the first horror movie when I realised it can kind of like affect you more than just from seeing the film. Like, once you've got it in your head, that there's a thing out there that can just appear. Like, when you're, I was in bed, I couldn't sleep. Like, I was so terrified. And like
how old were you at this point?
10 years old. Like, I couldn't.
Ten.
Yeah. Okay. The thing at the bottom of my bed, I was convinced was him, Candyman. And I couldn't...
the thing at the bottom of your bed. The man stood there. Were you convinced?
The weird black man with a hook hand at the bottom of my bed. I was sure it was him. Couldn't tell you exactly
before,
who it was.
Before
him.
You watched Candyman, you were fine with that guy. You were like, you and that guy were like that.
But as soon as... just in the house. Came with the house. then also, I couldn't brush my teeth like without looking like an idiot for years afterwards. Because I couldn't... So a big trick in the film is they're looking in the bathroom mirror and then they turn around, look back, and he's standing behind him. So I couldn't brush my teeth and bend down to rinse my mouth without taking my eyes off the mirror. Because in my mind, like, I thought if I looked away from the mirror and looked back to the mirror, he'll be there. Like, obviously, yeah. he'll be there. So I just couldn't. So if you try and, when you brush your teeth tonight, try and brush your teeth without taking your eyes off the mirror. It's difficult.
I don't know if I could. Well, exactly, it's one of those things. Like, it feels like an irrational fear, but because it's, like, so easy to, like, summon him.
Yeah.
But you've just got to say his name. Like, it almost feels like you're tempted. You're tempted. You want to know. You're curious.
Well,
you want to know
what's
going to happen.
I think, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure we did say his name, as like me and some friends.
How many times did you have to say it? Was it five?
Three times, I think. Five times, maybe.
Three or five.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I did it before as well. When I was a little bit older, and I was confident and cocky, and I was just
20 years old. Fuck you, Candyman.
Candyman. Doing it left, right, and centre into loads of mirrors, walking fast. Fuck you, still alive. Yeah. Living a dream, Candyman. And he's... to me still.
You froze for a second then. Are you back? Hello?
I'm back, yeah. I lost you. Lost you as well. You got it?
Yeah, I agree. I agree, man. Okay, so yeah, that was my first horror memory. What about you?
My first horror memory is it was a film as well, and I don't know, I'm not sure exactly how old I was, but I'm pretty sure it's super, super young. So there's a film called The Unnameable, which was released in 1988. It's based on the H.P. Lovecraft short story, The Unnameable. And there's like, it's sort of like a haunted house, group of kids, standard monster movie thing. And the unnameable is sort of like a female demon type thing with like sharp teeth, wings, horns. So very much like a sort of demon type thing. And this film really, really stuck with me for years and years. But I did go back to it and watch it again, probably like in my mid-20s. And it's awful. It's one of the worst films you could ever, ever see.
I've
like,
never heard of it.
The monster looks pretty good, and the monster looks pretty terrifying. Like the monster, it looks like a kind of something you've seen in like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, it is pretty scary. But the film, the acting, the plot, everything is just absolutely awful.
Wow, is it kind of like a devil? Yeah, I'm just having a quick Google.
Yeah, so she's like a sort of demon type thing. I can't remember exactly the details of the plot, but she gets summoned in like modern day and just starts picking off these people one by one. Now, the reason I saw this was because there's a reason I saw a lot of horror films. My mum used to like record horror films on VHS and then watch them back like on a Sunday daytime when she was having a bit of downtime. when I was like off in my room doing stuff, or do you know what I mean? She's having a bit of and I think she recorded it the Saturday night. She recorded it like a few days before she was going out on a Saturday night. I watched it while she was kind of like doing stuff and getting ready, and I think I kept coming in the room.
How
and watching
old
it.
She How was old like going, at the time?
I reckon possibly seven. I mean, that's way too young, isn't it? And I think she was sort of very wary of me sort of watching it, going, get out, stop watching.
Yeah.
But she went out on the nut. Yeah, yeah. I was just watching stuff, and I remember even now, like I know I said I watched it in my mid-20s, but even now there are moments in it which I remember. And really, must have really, really terrified me. Like the look of this sort of creature. There was moments when the creature like screamed into the air, and she'd like kill people and like sort of put her hand through their chest. And there's a few scenes I remember. One bit where she like comes into like a room where all these kids are like, it's like first person, going through the room. But yeah, terrified me. I couldn't sleep, and my mum was away, and I remember coming down the stairs and going, Dad, I'm scared. and he was playing like some snooker game on like the Sega Mega Drive.
Yeah.
And I just remember sitting there watching him play it, and just being just literally. I don't think I could sleep for like properly for weeks.
Do you miss being that scared of like horror movies? Cause I remember like having to brace myself a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Now I'm like kind of we're now hardened horror movie watchers. But...
Definitely, because as I said, when I went back and watched it, and I was so disappointed. Like, part of me was like, I wanted to be scared by it again.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to be scared by
it.
And there was
thrill.
There was a sequel as well, which was just called The Unnameable 2, The Statement of Randolph Carter. And I watched that as well, and that was also awful. Like they're really, really, really awful. Like B movie. I mean, consider it as an H.P. Lovecraft thing, it was embarrassing. But yeah,
that's interesting that you had such a young experience with H.P. Lovecraft material.
Yeah, that is quite strange, isn't it? Yeah. I used to watch a lot of films like that with my mum. Like, she'd let me watch certain films with her, like on a Sunday afternoon that she wanted to watch, that she'd like recorded a few nights before. But like, she'd try and stop me seeing scary bits. So like, I watched the film with her, but then no, something horrible's about to happen, and she like covered my eyes.
Yeah.
But then I said to her recently, I said, that didn't work. I saw so much horrible stuff in horror films growing up. I've never seen like Alien and Aliens really young.
Yeah, actually, I do remember seeing Alien quite, but I never really associated Alien with being, I think I associated more with being like a sci-fi. I think maybe I saw Aliens first.
I think I did as well.
More like an action thing to me than, although I'll tell you what, so this is an early horror memory that I didn't put down in my list. We used to have the Alien game for the,
yeah, Alien Trilogy.
Was it for the Mega Drive or was it for the Commodore 64?
PS1?
No, it was before that. It was like a little platformer game.
Okay, Alien 3 possibly?
Maybe.
That was a little
plat. So I used to play with friends, and like I'm not a good horror gamer. I've told you this before. I'm so scared. And maybe this is where it all stems from. So we were friends, we used to play in the bedroom, and then we used to get infected, and then it gives you like a countdown of like 10. So this is like how you die. Well,
until the chest burster comes out.
Yeah, and then like we hide behind the bed, and then we wait for it to count down for the chest to burst out, and then we'd all scream and like, and then run away, and then we play it, and then we turn it back on, and just do the same thing over and over again. But
I played so Alien Trilogy I had on PS1, and that was pretty scary because you had like sort of the motion tracker thing and the motion tracker noise, and that was, I mean, it was really effective, that game. I mean, that was as good an Alien game. That's probably the best Alien game before Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
So that unnameable memory was my first nightmare, because it gave me nightmares, and I couldn't think of anything else. And I used to play Sonic the Hedgehog like really, as late as I could, to try and like cleanse myself of the horrible. Yeah. I like play Sonic the Hedgehog thinking, yep, just play this game and don't think about anything else other than Sonic the Hedgehog in your head. Just think about that. And I constantly think about the unnameable.
Mentally training yourself. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's weird how like, they can cause you not to go to sleep. I always kind of think it's weird when like they can have like a physical, get a physical reaction out of you. It's so strange. But so yeah. I'll read out a couple from our horror hangout. Board of advisors. Tommy Draper says, I guess the first ever movie, so one of his horror memories, I guess the first ever movie where I was aware of proper scares was Jaws. Ben Gardner's head popping out of the boat is still a classic scare.
Yeah.
Time to perfection. Yeah.
That is horrible. I mean, that is a perfect scare, I think.
Yeah. And then Kev here says, American Werewolf in London, Nazi werewolf scene, and he's put the gift there. I haven't seen that in so long. Like, 10 years or something. I think it's coming up on the list, right?
Yeah. We've got that in maybe the next couple of films is coming up.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
We got one from Johan as well. So he's talking about Halloween. Obviously the original Halloween, I guess. So Laurie running to the houses, the neighbors ignoring her, and then Laurie banging the door as Michael just casually walks towards her, inching closer and closer. And he says it just gives him anxiety and irrational phobia of anyone holding a sharp object. You know, I mean, I feel like that. If someone's got a knife, I automatically feel like they're going to definitely stick it in my throat.
Yeah, it's Halloween's coming up as well. We've got these ones coming up. I feel like theirs are like actual horror movie stuff when I'm talking about dying on Alien on the Commodore, the Amiga, what it was called, the Amiga.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But I think that's the thing. We're trying to branch out. So not just horror movie memories, but just horror memories in general. Like the stuff that sort of crafted our, you know.
Yeah.
Our tastes.
Our formative years, yeah. So my next one, I guess, I've called it Turn It Off, Dad. No, wait, don't. So
Wait, this is the... don't turn it off or
don't turn it off. Yeah, because I'm kind of like, it's so scary. I can't watch it, but I kind of want to watch it. So it was the film my dad was watching was Tales from the Crypt presents Demon Knight. Have you seen this film?
Not sure.
I remember it being actually quite good. I've not seen it ever. I've not seen it since this night. But so it Tales from the Crypt. It was there. They started doing feature films, and I think this was the first one they did. It was on late night TV. It was on one of the weird extra channels. And this was before,
weird extra channels.
This was before you had like more than 50 channels. So this is like when you had like, I think it might have been Sci-Fi Channel. And it wasn't spelled S-Y-F-Y back then. No. It was spelled S-C-I-F-I. But the film is like some sort of weird ancient demon thing played by Billy Zane, and he's after these people, and there's like demon blood and there's all these like zombie creatures. It's like, it's full on insane. But I remember like watching it and kind of being with it for quite a while, watching it with my dad. And I always sat behind the sofa, like down the side of it. And then at some point, it just gets absolutely terrifying. There's another bit where Billy Zane punches a guy through the face, similar to The Unnameable, I guess. But
was Billy Zane just like, he just looked like Billy Zane? He didn't look horrible.
Just like Billy Zane. But like he played like a sort of charming Faustian sort of demon guy. Do you know what I mean? Like But he was very violent and very strong and all this kind of stuff. But then he kind of had these weird little demon zombie creatures that were always around him that would appear out of nowhere, and they were like, people would kind of turn into them if they were like influenced by the evil. Yeah, it's super gory, like super. I think I was 10 again for this. And at some point, like, me and my dad were like watching it, and my dad's not like a big horror movie person at all. But at some point, I just had to lie down and pretend I'd fallen to sleep, because I remember thinking, I just can't take it. Like, and I think my dad carried on watching it, and I think if dad knew I was still awake at some of those like final bits, I think my dad would have had to turn it off and say, "No, you're going to have to go to bed. Yeah, this is too much."
But you were there. What were you doing? Led down there watching it, one eye open.
Well, yeah. So I lied down, and I was like on the sofa cushion on the floor, like pretending to be asleep. But then I was like looking under the sofa, like at the TV.
Right.
So I've only seen like half the screen, but I remember just like unable to stop watching. But I was totally aware that it was just like horrific to the point. It was similar to Candyman. I knew I wasn't going to be able to sleep that night. Like But I couldn't stop. Is there something like that weird little titillation of horror movies that you just can't stop yourself?
Oh, the car crash effect. Ooh, I did something similar with Event Horizon.
Event Horizon? That was another one.
I remember being watching it with my mum and dad, and sort of pretty much just like, I remember my mum going, "You have to go to bed now. It's getting a bit gory, getting a bit scary." And I was like, no, it's okay. I can stay up. And yeah, as it got more gory and more scary, I did kind of like close my eye. You know when you're like closing your eyes, but you could just got them open just enough to make it so you could just see what's going on. I think I did that. Yeah. And then after a while, I had to go to bed. Yeah. Like I had to, because I was so scared.
Event Horizon is a really scary film. I've not seen it for a while.
And I remember going to bed thinking, the last thing I want to do right now is go to bed. But I don't want to watch it either. So I need to go to bed.
I tell you what, there's one film that I watched a similar age, a similar situation where I should have gone to bed, but then it was The Fly. But it didn't scare me. I think maybe it has too much in line with a superhero film. You know, like a superhero origin story.
Yeah, like, yeah, I can see that.
It just seemed to me to be kind of cool and interesting and weird. Never felt like that, because that's scary. Because what gory bad stuff happens in The Fly?
Oh, there's loads of gory. There's bits of him fall off. Like there's in the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, we've got a GIF of his ear popping off. There was a bit where he's like sick onto somebody's leg.
Yeah,
and it's like acid, and like it's just.
But to me, that kind of felt a little bit more like this is weird but interesting.
It's disgusting. It's like body horror. It's loads of horrible body horror stuff. Like he's got his knob in a jar, for God's sake, and he just couldn't let go of it.
Maybe that was cut. Maybe because this is on Channel 3 or something, so maybe it was one of those really edited down versions.
One of the bits that really got me in The Fly was when he tests it with the baboon, tests the machine,
the teleporter.
He tests it with a baboon, and the baboon ends up like inside out, because it doesn't work.
See, I don't really remember that either. So maybe I remember it more from The Fly 2. I think I've seen The Fly 2 way more nowadays.
Yeah, see, I don't know if I've seen that.
Where they've got the dog. Mm. And then they get them. Have you not seen Fly 2?
Is it with a baby? I don't think I've seen The Fly 2. No.
Yeah, you should watch it. It's quite good, I think.
We might watch. Well, maybe we watch The Fly for an episode, and then we watch The Fly 2 another time.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Your turn, man.
Okay. So this is a hiding behind the sofa memory.
Yeah.
And this is just pretty much the first few series of The X-Files. And I didn't used to watch it every single week. It was kind of like a treat. So I'm not sure how old I was. So some of these episodes that I've kind of picked out are from like 93, 94. But right. Again, that means I was 7 and 8. And I reckon I was a little bit older than that. So
is
maybe
Tombs
not.
The guy? Sorry, yeah, go on. I've got
yeah,
name
so my
here,
memory so. Is, I think it was on at 9 o'clock on BBC right. Two. And it was like a treat. I think it might be on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And I knew that X-Files was coming up. And it was always like, if I'd been a good boy, I knew, yeah. Oh, Mum, can I step and watch X-Files? Yes. It didn't happen every week, so I missed a few episodes. The theme music and the opening credits, when you see, like, there's a few weird things. You see, like, a UFO in the sky. You see, like, a sort of weird, misty sort of figure walking down a hallway. And then there's a horrible face. Like,
Have you seen the opening credits anytime recently? Yeah. You're all right. It was so weird and, like, scary and creepy back then, but now it's like, wow.
Yeah. But that was creepy, and there are a few episodes. Obviously, I've put down here the Fluke Man, who was a weird
which
sort
one's
of like
that? The Fluke Man.
It was a weird dude with like a sort of circular mouth, looked a little bit like an anus. He lived in like the sewer.
maybe, yeah.
There was, I mean, almost every episode I remember, there was like a Circus Freaks episode where there was like a murderer going around killing certain people, and the Circus Freak thing was like a guy's conjoined twin who like came off of his body and went around killing people. That was horrible.
Wow.
And then obviously Adrian Toomes, the guy who could like squeeze into the smallest possible spot under doors.
I remember like they used to have the same shot and he'd have his shirt sleeve there and he would go.
Yeah.
And that'd be all they'd need to do to show that he could stretch.
And he had like really horrible like yellow eyes. And I think on the first episode he was in, it was terrifying. On the second episode he was in, you find out that he made a nest and would like sort of regurgitate stuff and put horrible newspapers on the wall. I mean, it was all this stuff which just like made absolutely no sense to me, but I was absolutely terrified. There's another episode with sort of like a predator type creature in it, some sort of alien in the woods which like had some sort of camouflage and was killing people. I can't remember exactly what that episode was called, but I'm currently on season 7 of watching it through from the start. And all of the like Monster of the Week stuff is great. You know, I mean, all the comedy in it is great as well, but the Monster of the Week stuff is good. The sort of overarching mythology of like the sort of Mulder's sister being missing and an alien
and stuff. Episodes.
It
yeah.
does some now and again. It will be good, but I think a lot of the time it is quite boring. So when you get the Monster of the Week stuff, which they did with the new series, a lot Monster of the Week.
Yeah.
That was good. So, but yeah, my memory of that is hiding behind the sofa. Just remember my mum just going, "Oh, there's a horrible bit coming up," which is what he always used to say. And I'd just hide behind the sofa and just be like looking up. And I remember seeing like bits with the Fluke Man and Adrian Toomes.
I'd never watched it growing up. I couldn't hack the opening credits. Like, it's too much for me. I just don't think we had it on. I'm guessing we used to put whatever else, whatever the equivalent of X Factor was back then. Probably Generation Game or something.
But it was on at 9 o'clock, so it was after all the light entertainment stuff.
I would have been in bed.
It was like when TV got serious.
Yeah.
When TV got proper serious. There was that, and there was something on ITV called Strange But True, if you ever watched that.
Yeah, we used to watch that also. 999. You watch that? That was our horror movie of the week. Like, people getting stuck in bonfires and falling down hills and stuff.
Fucking bonfires. Falling down hills.
And it would, like, reenact him.
Well, no, strange but true, though. I mean, that was great. That was like all these weird sort of urban myths and urban legends and stuff. Stuff that was like strange but true.
Have you ever seen Catwatch's Fact or Fiction?
No.
I guess it was like the American equivalent. So it's the guy who he was like second lieutenant in Star Trek. You'd recognize him. He's got a beard. And he'd be like walking into like this room And then he'd have like an optical illusion, and he'd go, and he'd make some like stupid joke about it, and he'd go, fact or fiction. And then he'd play three like short films, which were really sort of poorly reenacted, these like things. And then it would say, so it'd be like one guy had a psychic episode, and another guy got lost and was helped by a ghost to get home, or you know, those kind of weird things. And then you have to say which one you think is fact and which one you think is fiction. And they're all bullshit. Every single one's bullshit.
Turns out the one about the ghost helping him home on his back was
yeah, but that's what he did. And they go, that was facts. And then he just end the episode. And they're like, no, it wasn't. It really, really wasn't. But all those things are on YouTube now. And
Cat really
likes them.
It's creepy, though. I think that's it. The reason that stuff was so creepy was because you genuinely thought, shit, did that really happen?
The man on the TV says it's true, so it must be.
He said it was true.
Yeah.
Derek Acora, absolutely loving it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, X-Files is great. I actually didn't watch it growing up, but we have been watching it recently, trying to catch up on it all. I think we're on season 4 or something. The last one we saw was Phoebe's brother from Friends. Electric powers. That was the last one we watched.
I mean, there are so many episodes which are basically X-Men origin stories. Yeah, there's like psychic people, guys with electricity powers, fire powers.
Yeah.
Like there's just so many like that. And to be honest, they're not so great. But sometimes you'll get like a really like unique episode.
Yeah.
Really, and a really like unique creature or a really unique sort of weird thing. And it's amazing. But it does sort of sack. These series are like 24 episodes long.
Yeah.
So I reckon about, I don't want to say half, but maybe about 8 episodes in those 24 are absolute gold.
Yeah.
The rest can kind of, you can take them or leave them. But that gold is worth it because some of them are just like, some of the, especially there's a lot of stuff directed by Vince Gilligan from one who did Breaking Bad. His episodes, the ones he wrote and directed, including, there's one of a guy who can like make black holes.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That sounds cool.
That's good. And there's loads of cool episodes written and directed by him. And it's almost a game of spot the Hollywood actor as well, because there's so many big names.
Like just
tiny little minimal parts.
Like I said, Jack Black was in that one, and he got killed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jack Black was in that one. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
There's loads of stuff, like Bryan Cranston's in one.
Yeah.
There's just, yeah. Cool.
So let's have a quick look at the lists from the Facebook group again. Andy had a big one about various video games.
We'll come back to that when we discuss some games ourselves. Have we got anything else from a little bit further down? Johan talking about Audition.
Yeah, the torture sequence. While I love this movie, that scene is just gruesome. I saw it when I was 15, well, via word of mouth, and I was not expecting it. It made me very uncomfortable for a while. I can now look at it years later and admire it. The instant effect it had on me. We watched that, and it's pretty good. It's pretty gruesome. That final torture scene will stay with me, I think, for a long time.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't have much of an effect on us because we saw it when we were older. Old and decrepit, and our, you know, just don't affect us the same way because we're hard.
Yeah. And then he also said, first ever jump scare, you will laugh, but the end credits of Count Dracula. How did the end credits of Count Dracula go?
I don't remember.
I remember getting scared of what's that? What's Beneath the Trapdoor? What's on the trapdoor?
Oh.
Don't go down there. Hello, Bert. Hello.
Yeah, like, that was a bit creepy, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Johan said he was about 4, and loads of stuff popped out at the end of like a fun episode, and you hide behind the sofa or leave the room before the credits roll. So obviously, it was something that's going on.
Yeah.
Kev Hurst has gone for a jump scare, going with American Werewolf in London again.
Yeah.
So it's a moment. I think is this an actual moment or is this a dream sequence?
I think it's a dream. Yeah. I actually do remember this bit. Yeah.
There's a nurse going over to the main character and he sort of just, his eyes are it proper like Michael Jackson in Thriller moment where he's got horrible teeth and yellow eyes.
It's a horror. It's a horror.
It's a horror. It sure is. What's your next horror memory? Luke Condor with a K.
So first horror on the big screen. It's 2006. I just turned 18. I went with Skip, I think. Oh. Come and Skip and our girlfriends at the time. We went to watch the Hills Have Eyes remake.
Yes.
I don't think like watching horror stuff on TV quite prepares you for like how the added sound, like the really big screen, the added sound really does, like all the jump scares, they make you squeal. Like even like as an 18-year-old.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Guy, I've got long hair. I've got a little bit of stubble coming in now. A bit of a ratty mustache. Have you seen the Hills Have Eyes remake?
Yep. Probably like only around the time. Yeah, I remember it being pretty good, pretty gruesome. It's like the proper hillbilly horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's like they're like traveling across America somewhere, and the cars break down, and then they get like marauded by these mutant nuclear. They live in like a nuclear test town sort of thing, and they get marauded. They kill one of their dogs. They basically kill everyone apart from one guy, the nerdy guy, one of their dogs, and then he has to go into the town to get his baby back from them. And it's a proper like revenge story, but I remember like it being so like incredibly brutal and scary. And I remember I was just glad that we were with girls who were screaming loud enough to sort of drown out our screams.
Was that you, Luke? No, no.
I've always had like a low scream. That's so I sound like an absolute idiot. You know when you're on like a roller coaster, you'll hear me go, and it's like I'll be genuinely like screaming. But it just sounds like I'm like not like I'm taking a piss or like
monotone scream.
Ah,
ow, bloody hell, terrifying. And when you're happy, it's the same. Yeah.
I think it just kind of made me realize how effective going to the cinema is, especially to see horror films. It adds a lot going into the cinema.
I think my first horror the first horror I remember on the big screen was the Dawn of the Dead remake.
See, that came out like the year before and I tried to get in and wasn't allowed.
That must have been the year before. I don't know how I got in. I don't know if I was 18, but we went to see it more than once. We went to see it once and we were like, because I mean, it's so visceral, that film. I mean, everything is dialed up to 11 in terms of extreme. Running zombies, gore, sort of just like everything. I mean, it is proper, proper terrifying.
That remember first scene, like, that little girl, like, yeah. I can still think about that. It's a really, really scary film.
We used to, like, me and a few of my friends used to walk to the cinema. It wasn't too far, probably like half an hour walk. And then we used to walk home. And then, bearing in mind, it was quite late. I think I was walking home with a friend of mine. And there was that moment where I go, see you later then, mate. See you later. Because I lived the furthest away. And I remember walking on my own. I had to go through an underpass.
Yeah.
And I was like, just a bloody underpass, isn't it, mate? And as I was walking through, I saw like the shadow of someone coming towards me. They weren't running or anything.
Did you run?
I turned around and walked up and just went a different way. I was proper terrified. Like that walk home. I remember that walk home was fine for a while, but then I just started running. Shit.
Because I remember I tried to get in that like the year before and I was 17 and they asked for ID. And I remember being really disappointed, but it was probably for the best. I probably shouldn't have seen that.
Like, I remember me and my friends going out, that was amazing. That was amazing. But everyone deep down was going, we are terrified. There is no way we're going to be able to sleep tonight. But yeah, that film still affects me now. Like, if I watch it now, I'm still like, there's so many moments.
I haven't seen it in a while, and I'd like to watch it again.
I mean, it's great. Obviously, as it's an early Zack Snyder film, it's great to go back and watch and sort of see the way his filmmaking style has adapted to just slow-mo now.
One of Stephen King's favorite horror movies as well.
Really? The remake? Oh, wow.
Yeah, the remake. Yeah, yeah. There's a few on there. He had like 10. He made a list recently. I think there's a couple of more recent ones. Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I thought was a bit odd to have on there. Yeah, but there's some good ones as well. There's like The Changelings. I think maybe The Innocents is on there or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But so your turn?
Yeah. My next horror moment is my first jump scare, or at least the first jump scare I officially remember. So it's from Resident Evil, the game, the PS1 game from 1996, which I bought in the Virgin Megastore. So it was rated 15. So I took my tallest friend with me.
Yeah.
And I got him to buy it. And we went back to my house and we played it. And I can't remember. I think I'd read about it like in a few magazines that it was just like, do you know what I mean? It was the first. There have been a few survival horror games out, like Alone in the Dark. But nothing sort of like on this console, really. Nothing to this scale, anyway.
Rezzo was like, Rezzo. Maybe he's saying it now, like, we used to call it. Resident Evil was like the first game I remember being told about. My cousin had it, and he used to terrify me. I'd never even seen it, didn't know, I never played it, but just by him talking about it, I used to go, oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of everything about this game, atmosphere, music, like the music. I still listen to the soundtrack now, and it's still like, it's still so effective. And the fact that you've got these fixed camera angles and the sound effects and just everything is just kind of horrible. I mean, the voice acting is like laughable, but it kind of like adds to that B movie aesthetic of everything that it is utterly ridiculous. Like, but at the same time, it's horrible. And the jump scare for me. There is a moment I would always play as Jill Valentine, so you could choose between Jill Valentine and Chris Redfield. I'd always play as Jill Valentine.
Why would you go with Jill Valentine?
Because she starts off with a gun, whereas Chris starts off with a knife, and you get the gun a little bit later.
I had
no time for that. I had absolutely no time for that. Give me a gun immediately.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a moment where you walk into a sort of corridor, and it looks quite nice. There's floral wallpaper, and as you start walking forward, smash the window. The window smashes in, and a Cerberus dog jumps in, and not just one, two. And I mean, I remember that moment just completely like leaping out of my chair and just being like, yeah. And then you're sort of like trying to aim the gun at this dog that's like jumping around you.
Yeah, the aiming system was really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I only remember that point because I got the GameCube remake. Because I tried to play Rezzo, as you used to call it, on the PlayStation numerous times, and I just couldn't hack it. I just such a wimp with like horror games.
I used to always have to play it like with somebody in the room with me, pretty much.
Yeah. I think that I got Dino Crisis. I managed to get far through that, and that was like a horror.
That's a great game.
Yeah, weirdly, like is that Capcom?
Capcom as well, yeah. So it's pretty much just like it's Resident Evil with dinosaurs, but it is ace. The new stuff it does. Also, another moment in the original Resident Evil, there's a moment where you're reading like a diary of someone who was turning into a. So I mean, it's great because in Resident Evil, there's all these notes and diaries around that kind of like flesh out the story for you. So you realize that there was like some laboratory assistant who's turned into a zombie and he's writing this diary. And there's even a bit at the end of the diary where he says, "Itchy, tasty," where he's like, he's obviously almost turned completely into a zombie and he's talking about human flesh. You finish reading it and the zombie pops out of a cupboard behind you. Doors fly open and he comes out. I mean, that was agony.
Yeah, I need to play again. I mean, we'll talk about the horror games in a second again, but I do just want to quickly... Did Andy have something to say about Resident Evil 1?
I think he had a couple of bits to say about the original Resident Evil, because, so in terms of survival horror games, I think Andy's... Where are we looking?
Resident Evil has to be up top. I was in early high school when the original came out, and I remember the panic when that dog jumped through the window. There you go. Or the fixed camera had you walk right into the arms of... Yeah, it was the way the camera and also the going up the stairs and opening doors. I remember that just being just too scary. Like
it was cause... it was obviously a loading screen, but it was just like a really unique way of like ramping up the tension. Like suddenly there's a door, and suddenly as soon as the game comes on, a zombie could be right in front of you. There could be any sort of creature right in front of you.
So what is it about games that, because I can handle horror movies fine and horror books fine, but like there's something about a game where I feel like in a horror movie I've been able to rationalize and say, look, it's not me, it's fiction. It's not real. But then what is it about a game that like makes it so...
With a horror film, you kind of feel like you're along for the ride. And anything that kind of jumps out at you, like that's the director's... He wanted that to happen. He wanted things to go a certain way. With a game, it feels like you're crafting your own story out of it. Yeah. I mean, I know obviously, again, there's a lot of moments that have been tailored to scare you. But at the same time, it feels like you're experiencing it properly. So everything you do, you kind of feel like you're responsible for it. So the fact that you've gone this way and the fact that you've made this choice, you're responsible for it. So it's kind of like makes you feel quite isolated in the game, especially when there's like loads of creatures and stuff and you think, well, I haven't got any bullets. Oh, my God, that's my fault. You know what I mean? It does feel like it's like the most immersive thing. I mean, there's a lot of survival horror, especially some stuff I've played recently that isn't so great. So it goes to show that it's not easy to do.
Yeah.
But Resident Evil kind of just took it and just made it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's fantastic. And Andy's also mentioned stuff from Resident Evil 2, liquor jumping through a one-way mirror. I remember that. That was terrifying.
Yeah.
Relentless pursuit of the nemesis in Resident Evil 3, which was like, there was in any Resident Evil game, early game, the way to get out of the horror was simply go into another room.
It could
never come through a door. Suddenly in Resident Evil 3, the nemesis could come through a door and he had a rocket launcher.
How did that work? So he would just appear if you'd spent too long in a room or something?
No. He would only appear in certain parts of the game. So only certain particular story bits.
Right,
so
it
wouldn't be like everywhere and anywhere. He would just appear in certain parts of the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, survival horror is probably one of my favorite genres of game. So obviously Andy's also mentioned Resident Evil 7, which came out earlier this year, which was, I mean, it was a return to form, as he mentioned, just because 4 had a little bit of action. 5 and 6 were like completely full-blown action.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 7's gone back to being quite a sort of delicately poised horror game. He's also mentioned a few moments from games. So he said the helplessness of running from serial killers in Clock Tower 3 as a weaponless child. The visceral imagery of Silent Hill. I mean, that's another one that used to get me. Silent Hill was just the noise of that siren going off, the thick fog.
I never played the first few, but I played... It was actually one of the... wasn't the first horror game that I was able to play all the way through, but it was one of them. It was the fourth one, I think, called The Room. And
you're
locked in a room, you got to work out. It's all first person, and then it cuts to this other.
That was great.
And I remember like one bit like shitting me up at the moment, but like the imagery of it is kind of amazing. Where you hear like a murmuring, you're walking through a hospital, and you hear this weird murmuring, and you go into a room, and the way the camera angle flicks behind you, you suddenly see there's like a massive face of this like girl, like she's just part of the scenery, but her eyes like twitching, you know, like sort of Japanese horror eye twitching thing.
Yeah, it is all just like the surreal, weird creations.
Yeah,
that like these weird creatures with so many limbs and so many different sort of. It was a very strange, a completely different. A lot of people, I think, when Silent Hill first came out, a lot of people said it was like Resident Evil, but just a little bit weirder. But I think it is a completely different sort of game. Like
it's a thing that was like our first introduction into Japanese horror, Asian horror, like because that was before Ring, right?
I suppose it was.
Release Silent Hill, what did you think of the Silent Hill movie?
I really liked the Silent Hill movie. I thought it was probably really the most. It has pretty much recreated the game in terms of sound effects, the way it looks, even soundtrack. It's like recreated the game. It's probably one of the only games that's done that has really stuck close to the source material and made a film out of it. And I think it works. I know it's got mixed reception.
Well, I recently looked into it because I was like, I remember that film being quite good or like quite enjoying it. And I kind of saw that not many people kind of agreed. Like it seemed to get a bit of hate. And I was like, why did I like that film so much? Because I'm sure it was good. I'm sure it was like...
Yeah, I mean, it does, in terms of what the Resident Evil films are, it's 100 times better than any one of those films could ever hope to be.
Yeah.
Because the Resident Evil films, without going into it too far, are horse shit!
So what else did Andy say?
One more thing Andy said, which I kind of had, from what he said, I had to go back and play it only recently. He said the game he generally felt the most panic over is a version of Home Alone on the NES. You basically have to evade Harry and Mara for 10 minutes. So many screams and grisly ends for poor Kevin McAllister. Now, I was like, oh my God, I remember feeling exactly the same, but I had Home Alone on a Mega Drive. So I went and played it this week to just remember. So you've got like a 20-minute countdown. Harry and Marv are going around all these houses, flooding them. You have to go in and cause Harry and Marv as much pain as possible so they leave. And you've got to like put set traps and like build all these guns. But when they run towards you, they grab you and pick you up and they put you on the hook like in the film. And you've got to like kick your way off. It is panic-inducing. as soon as they come towards you, you're like trying to shoot them. Oh, God, trying to shoot them with a BB gun. So, yeah, Andy, I'm completely with you on that.
Let's give that a go.
Yeah, it is great fun. But weird seeing like a game with like a 20-minute countdown. Like, I'm obviously a very short experience, but
so that's the game. That's the entire game. The 20-minute.
Yeah, that's the entire game. You have to stop them flooding houses because they're the wet bandits.
It rings a bell. If I have played it, it wasn't very long. It was a long time ago. So what else did Andy say? So it's perspective and camera mechanic forcing close encounters with the dead in Project Zero. It's not something the horror games I'm not quite au fait with. So
yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think I've played that. Oh, he's talking about Alien Isolation as well. So the incredible stress built by environment and Alien Isolation, and the fact that the console listened to you making sound in real life meaning I couldn't face anyone in one chapter.
Nobody did.
I didn't know that. I've played that though. I've played quite a lot of that, but I found it
too difficult. Okay.
Yeah, it was way too difficult. But I mean, it was great. I mean, it was like such a Nostromo the ship, isn't it? Such a great recreation of sort of that late 70s aesthetic of like science fiction. But yeah, that is a great game. I think it's only like, I think I replayed it recently, and I think I bought it like on the PlayStation store for only a couple of quid. Delicious. What's your next horror memory, Mr. Luke Condor?
So what do we got? So prose horror making me faint. Like, I wasn't even sure whether to include this, but I just thought like the visceral effect it had on me, I kind of have to. And this was fairly recently, 2013. Someone sent me a short story called Guts by Chuck Palahniuk, who wrote Fight Club and Haunted and a few other books. What's that? Survivor. I'd never read it. He was writing before, and it was the first, like, it's only like maybe 2,000 words, and it's basically like three little stories about different sort of sexual perversions. And I don't want to spoil it too much. I would really like you to read it, especially because I know you're like a Chuck fan. But I remember reading. So I used to work in an Apple shop, and there was like the front of the shop, and there was the back of the shop, and we had like an iMac at the back of the shop. So I sat at the back. Customers and were being dealt with at the front. While I thought, I'll just have a quick. I think I was supposed to be doing the banking for the store or something. And I was like, just have a quick read of this. It's quite short. And I remember reading it, and the way Chuck writes it, he talks about this moment where something happens, and he paints such a vivid picture, but you don't realize what it is, and then you kind of figure it out halfway through, I just remember starting to feel like, this is not good. I felt like I had to put my head down against the desk because I was about to faint. And like, this is the first time that prose, like literally just words on a page, like nearly made me fall over, like, and just fall to the ground and start like blush running to my head sort of thing.
You needed some Lucozade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some electrolytes. But this short story called Guts is famous for it. So he apparently used to do public readings of it. And he'd always see at least one or two people in the audience, like their head would just drop from the chair because they just faint. Because it's almost like a trick, like the way he's able to sort of reveal what's happening, it just kind of triggers something in people, and it just makes them makes some people faint. And he said he did a reading in Spain, and when you do a public reading in Spain, you have a translator, but it's not just a translator; they put like a weird theatrical embellishment on everything, so they're sort of booming it out, everything they're saying, and sort of like trying to act it out a bit. And he's reading this short story, and he said when he got to like that point, he just saw like people like the heads just dropping like a Guess Who board. Yeah, he just saw them like yeah. But honestly, like it's such a disgusting story. Like it's amazing, really. Like I think I read it again fairly recently, and it wasn't the same. I think it'll only sort of get you once. But yeah, if you haven't read it, dude, I completely recommend it. It's
No, I've not read that. One of Chuck's books, Snuff.
Yeah.
Made me feel. I don't know if you read that. Didn't make me feel like I was going to faint, but it kind of made me feel a little bit like queasy. Like there's it's not like gore. It's not like gory or anything, but it's just the way it kind of reveals a few things in that book made me feel a bit queasy. Same with American Psycho, actually, but the way it sort
I've heard that about American Psycho and Girl Next Door as well.
Yeah, there's just a couple of bits in it which you kind of read and you have to go, wait, what? And you go back and you're a bit like, what? It's almost like the most extreme. Oh, like a really extreme, violent, gory moment, but just said, just like written so pedestrianly.
Yeah.
Like, this happened, and then this thing also happened. Like, there's a bit, this isn't a spoiler, but there's definitely, I remember this, there's definitely a bit where it's described that Patrick Bateman cuts off someone's vagina and puts it in the microwave.
Right.
And the way that's sort of described,
it just
seems out of place. And it's like, what? Like it is one of those books which it does sort of go from A to B extremely. Like sometimes it's like extreme pornographic erotica. And other moments it's just like pure gore fest. And other times it's like just conversations about who's got the nicest suit. It's just one of the
I still need to read it. It's actually another book that sort of gave me a visceral, again, not quite as visceral as Guts. That short story, I've never read anything like it. I doubt I'll ever will again. But it was The Troop by Nick Cutter. It's fairly recent. I've read it, and a guy told me it should come with a sick bucket because it's so grim and so gross. It's about like being infected with flatworms, these sort of mutant flatworms. And a guy is convinced they're inside him. And he's sort of like, the way he describes it, like he keeps cutting himself and he keeps seeing things moving in. He keeps trying to grab him, but he's not infected. He just thinks he is. And he ends up like killing himself just by cutting himself so deep and trying to get into him to get these worms out that aren't there. The way he describes it, I was reading on a bus, just couldn't read more than a sentence without looking away and trying to think of something else. Like, think of like, you know, when you're trying to keep the sexual act as long as possible. It's a similar sort of thing.
Or just think of flatworms at that particular time. I'm infected with flatworms. What? You're infected with what? No, I'm not.
Yeah. But dude, Guts, I completely recommend that.
Cool. Right, should we do another moment, horror moment? I've just called this yuck.
Right.
And I think the theme I want to sort of explore with this horror memory thing is like horror and disgusting moments or moments to stick with you from like fantasy films, particularly like the 1980s stuff that was like it wasn't necessarily a horror film. But there are moments in it which utterly terrified you. My moment was from Ridley Scott's Legend, sort of fantasy epic with like unicorns and goblins and stuff. Tim Curry as Darkness, who is basically the devil. And then you've got Tom Cruise as the hero, Jack. And then
that film
loads
was scary,
of,
right? That film, I'm sure
that
it was
film
scary.
Was terrifying. I mean, it really stuck with me. And there's a bit. Or Tom Hanks? Did I say Tom Cruise? Did I say Hanks the first time as well? Hanks! Tom Cruise, pre-dental work, because he's got some funny little fangs going on. there's a moment where he like sort terrifying. Of goes for a swamp to try and get towards like where Darkness's lair is.
Yeah,
and there's like a witch swamp hag called Meg Mucklebones. Who sort of comes out of the water and she's like looks a little bit like the witch from The Witches, Roald Dahl's Witches. Yeah.
That film scared me as a kid as well. I forgot about that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, terrifying. Yeah. And she was, I think the character of Meg Mucklebones is played by a man, but there's something just absolutely terrifying. Like, this is yuck. This is like, I can't even look because she's all slimy and green and just like horrible thin strands of black hair. And Tom Cruise has to sort of show her, he shows her her reflection in his shield, and she's kind of like looking at it, and then she ends up taking her head off. But that moment was like, because there's a lot of moments in that film which are quite horrible, like the goblins are pretty disgusting, even like the little good, even like the good guys, like the little fairies, and there's like a little pixie dude, freaky, everything's freaky, even like the little fairy who's like a little jealous fairy, gets jealous when Tom Cruise's character starts.
What was this, the kids film? Was it like a four kids?
I don't think it's four kids. No, it's kind of like a, it wasn't like, I don't think it was rated 18 or anything, but it was.
Did you ever watch, you just make me think of like all those weird fantasy, they were fantasy films, but like they had horror elements, or like, because they were using similar makeup effects to horror films at the time, they kind of felt horrific.
Yeah. Well, lot of that, a lot of like Jim Henson stuff, like Labyrinth and that, like there are loads of moments in that which really stuck with me.
I remember Conan, it was the second one.
Yeah.
Where they have to like rip the horn off of this demon's head thing. Do you remember that? Because they put the horn onto him and it comes to life, and then Conan has to save them. And Arnold Schwarzenegger pulls this horn off, and it just sort of blood like spurting everywhere. Remember that?
It's just the way some of these like makeup effects, and like the when you see them across different films and you recognize them, like all the Jim Henson stuff from like Labyrinth, and the Dark Crystal.
I never watched Dark Crystal.
All these, oh, you never did.
No,
but all these like sort of weird puppety sort of things always really used to terrify me, because obviously they look so strange because they're puppets, and it was kind of affected me in a similar way to like the Ray Harryhausen stuff did, like Jason and the Argonauts and Sinbad and things like that. The way that they were sort of a little bit, they didn't move like quite naturally, so they looked very like otherworldly, and it was just odd. I mean, that's what I got from Legend here, was that there's so much weird shit going on.
Yeah, it's sort of like the claymation stuff as well. Did you ever watch a film called Gates 2? I never watched the first one. But
I never watched the first one. Gates was a great film. No, I don't think I did. What?
So
is it like Troll 2, where there's not an original troll? There's just
no idea. I just remember it being like a claymation troll that they had in a. In fact, I think Stranger Things 2 might have taken some inspiration from this, because they had like one of the demon troll things as a baby in a cage.
Oh, right, okay.
And it sort of gets bigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's that whole, like, that weird sort of claymation stuff. It looks horrific because it's not real. Like, it looks like it shouldn't be there.
Yeah, exactly. It looks so strange that it doesn't look like it's of this world. Yeah. And I think that's what's scary about the Jim Henson stuff. Because, I mean, in Labyrinth, all the little puppets and all the little goblins used to terrify me. Obviously, David Bowie used to terrify me as well. With his
dance,
crotch.
Magic dance.
Magic dance. Loads of horrible stuff in Labyrinth.
Yeah,
it was like disgusting, but yeah,
it's good. I think I liked Labyrinth. After Never Ending Story, I remember that being kind of scary.
When the horse gets sucked into the mud,
Gremlins, that comes to mind. All those sort of films, Gremlins, from young. That's more of like a monster thing, but. What else? Critters? No, that was full on horror movie. That was there's films that I used to watch as a kid. Masters of the Universe. I remember that had some scary moments in it.
It's just the way that like these visual effects from the eighties through to early 90s.
Yeah,
that were obviously very much monster and makeup effects and stuff that were like actual effects.
Yeah,
rather than CGI or any sort of computer generated stuff. It was that stuff. I mean, like, just completely different, but like From Dusk Till Dawn, the way all of those creature effects were kind of like on screen, and a lot of the gooey, gunky, horrible violence was all done sort of by makeup. And there's something about that that just makes it look. I mean, the ultimate sort of example of this is The Thing, where.
Yeah, when he took that to like the nth degree. Yeah.
That's like the nth degree, and that's, you know, that's why stuff like that will continue to sort of be terrifying and won't really age, because it's of its time, and you can kind of, even though you can see it's like makeup effect, it still looks terrifying.
We'll be watching that one. I think it's number 3 or number 2 on the list.
Yes, we will.
But okay, so both of our last ones, I think, are quite similar. So for me, we talked about horror games. I've just been unable to play horror games. I mean, there's been a few I managed to push myself through, but the one I actually was like, no, Luke, you're 22 years old now or something. You have to sort of get over this. And it was Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube. And I think it's because I had the GameCube. I didn't have many sort of adult games for it. And that was like one of the only ones that was like, kind of like had some action moments and guns and stuff. And I was like, no, I've got to play Resident Evil 4. So you played, it's on your list as well. What did you call it for yours?
So my moment is called Holy Shit, No Thanks. So your moment was a horror game I managed to play. Mine's called Holy Shit, No Thanks. Because of a particular enemy in this game, which I think may be the most terrifying enemy in video game history.
Is it the shark?
it was the shark. There were so many enemies in this game. This game was massive, you know. Obviously, yeah. they've taken the classic Resident Evil. They've changed it to like over the shoulder, focus more on action. But so many of the enemies and so many of the areas, like they really didn't lose the atmosphere of everything. I mean, it was completely different, but they didn't lose the atmosphere. And it was just that constant threat of like, what the hell's behind me? What the hell's gonna? Do you know what I mean? It's a different sort of threat to the fixed camera angles. You can kind of pretty much see everything that's there. When you change camera angle, there might be some new threat. Yeah. But in Resident Evil 4, it was constantly everything's behind you. It was the sound of that chainsaw in the village.
Yeah, that's
when you could hear it being revved in the distance. You didn't know how far away they were.
It was like, so the game starts, and you're kind of expecting zombies or something. And then you sort of walk, and you find this village, and you're looking through your fancy telescope at the village. You see they've killed someone, and it's like just villagers walking around. And then there's quite a lot of them as well. And you walk, and as soon as they see you, they all start like sprinting towards you, like mad, like they're gonna kill you. And so then you are right; it's that chainsaw like on the wind, and you're like, "What the fuck is that?" And then
there's no zombies in this game, which is like a game franchise that's famous for zombies. No zombies. I mean, that was crazy. But they're infected by this thing called Las Plagas, which is like a horrible sort of thing that infects them, just makes them go nuts. And sometimes, if you take their head off correctly, there's this big horrible
plant creature.
So there's so many different areas in this game now. So many different enemies, like giant sort of things, and then there's like loads of these sort of like bosses, which like mutate in loads of different ways.
Yeah.
But for me, the enemy, which I think maybe you come across twice in the game, which is horrible because after you feel like you've done it once, you're like, thank God that moment's over.
Yeah.
But basically, there's an area of the game where you start finding these frozen bodies, and they're kind of like humanoid, but they're a little bit sort of wobbly and elongated. They're kind of purplish, and they've got like spikes coming out of them, big horrible teeth as well. But you find these kind of like frozen bodies. I think you're looking for an item or something. And basically, the music that accompanies these guys when they come to life, so they're called regenerators, but the music that accompanies these guys when they come to life, and you can either hear the sound of them, which is this sort of like heavy breathing.
Yeah.
And you're sort of stuck in a really confined area. You're stuck in a confined area. And the trick with this guy is you can't actually kill him. So you start shooting and blowing off arms, blowing off legs, and they're regenerating, come back to life. You need a special gun, which has got like a heat-seeking sort of attachment on the rifle.
Yeah.
And they've got sort of like four or five little hearts that you need to take out one by one. But if you haven't got that weapon, then it's very difficult to... And they sort of like, they can attack you with like Dalsim arms, like really long arms.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just the fact that you always end up with these enemies in like a really confined space where you like need to open a door with like three keys or something. So you can't, you kind of got to fight them.
I sort of remember these things. I think I maybe have repressed the memory of them. Like they look pretty. I'm just googling to sort of try and remind myself. I do kind of remember them like impaling you on the spikes that come out of the chests or something.
Yeah, but it's just that's the thing. It was just the music and the sound of them that when you didn't even see them, you knew you're fucked basically. Because and if you didn't know how to kill them, like obviously back in 2005. You probably would have tried to find something on the internet or something, but
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Games didn't hold your hand as much as they perhaps do now. So it was almost like you didn't get any hints on the screen. You didn't really know exactly how to kill them. And if you'd missed picking up that weapon, or you hadn't bought the attachment for your rifle,
you were buggered.
You, you were buggered, you were screwed. So it was kind of like shooting them all over their body to open you can hit these hearts. Sometimes you get lucky. But yeah, it happens once, and then there's another time when you're in like a garbage disposal area and you just land in the garbage disposal and there's one of them in there with you. it's like dead, but you know it's not dead.
Yeah.
You're just like, so yeah, that for me, the fact that when I first started playing Resident Evil 4, I was like, I don't know if I like this. Is this really, do you know what I mean? Is this,
yeah,
have they really, is this a good game? But I
think the reason I was able to play it, because it is scary. Like, it starts off scary anyway for me, but then it becomes just kind of a fun action game. And I think that was why I was able to sort of keep going.
Because there's like an abundance of ammo as well, whereas in the other Resident Evil games, there wasn't all that much ammo. So you kind of you kind of really did feel up against it. But with this, it's a different, I mean, it is a different experience, but it is still a Resident Evil experience. There is that nature of survival. It's a lot more fraught and a lot more energetic, but it is.
So, okay, so let's say there's like three eras of Rezo games. So there's the first survival horror, 1-3. Then there's these more action-y orientated ones. And then there's like Resident Evil 7, the new one, which is the kind of
slower. So I guess...
Would you say like the new one's a little bit like Outlast? That kind of... Because I've only seen your...
Not necessarily. Okay. I think when you first start playing this Resident Evil 7, it feels like a completely new experience. But after a while, after a few hours, it just feels like a Resident Evil game. Right. It genuinely does. Like, it feels... Like with the save rooms and it just does. I mean, obviously it's completely different. Yeah. Ink ribbons and it's first person, which obviously has not really been happened in a main entry franchise, main entry of the franchise. But yeah, it does feel like a Resident Evil game when as you get deeper and deeper into it, as sort of things kick off a little bit more, it does feel a little bit Resident Evil 4. Maybe not as action packed as that, but it does feel a little bit Resident Evil 4.
Are they? So what's the bad guys in that? Is it zombies? Is it just like an infected family or something.
Well, there's like a family of like three or four sort of like hillbilly type characters who
Texas Chainsaw sort of family.
Yeah, sort of a little bit like that, but obviously it's a lot deeper than that. A lot of mutations and stuff. Yeah. And then there's these creatures which are sort of black. I can't remember exactly what they're called, but they're kind of like made up. In a couple of previous Resident Evil games, they were like made up of leeches. They look a little bit like that. But I can't remember exactly what they're called. I think they're called the... If I can find that in a second. So they're just sort of like... The Molded, that's it. The Molded. So there's all this black gunk which kind of appears like in basements and in sort of darkly lit and dimly lit corridors. And they kind of come out of it. And they're these weird sort of like bendy... They look a bit like the Regenerators, to be honest, but they're a lot more faceless.
Yeah.
But yeah, difficult to kill. That's the thing. You might have a lot more... That's the thing. In Resident Evil 7, less ammo again. So you really have to sort of save it. And then these creatures are difficult to kill, so you need to like get headshots in and stuff. But yeah, they've gone back to their roots, definitely.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, I like Cody Gates. I mean, at the minute I'm trying to play Amnesia. You've just put, for Halloween, you just put a video of you playing it on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So people can go check that out.
This
is a scary game, and I'm kind of half determined to sort of actually play it and go all the way through. But it's going to take me ages, I think. Judging by how fast you played those first 20 minutes and how slow it's taken me to do that same thing.
Well, I kind of only played, as I said, I've only played it fast just for that video because I thought it'd be quite boring if I was really slow. But most of the time, I think I've got to a point now where I need to speed up because there's things following me constantly and I constantly So I feel like I need to sort of get on with it, otherwise I'm going to be too scary. Dead. Because, I mean, survival horror games, I really enjoy them. They are like one of my favorite genres of game to play, but I'm still always really scared. Maybe because like not many films actually scare me. Not say it because I'm bloody hard or anything, you know, because I know I'm hard, but not many films genuinely scare me. Like, it's usually nostalgic remembering being scared or watching an older film that scares me. But with games, I genuinely do feel scared, so it's kind of like.
See, maybe that's what I... So, maybe I need to... We were talking earlier about how I don't really feel scared by films, horror films anymore. Not really. Like, sometimes it'll scare me. Maybe it's usually more like a tense thing when I'm scared for a particular character dying. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want him to die. I like that guy. But it never really scares me that much anymore. So maybe games are where I can find that titillation.
Yeah, if you're looking for a bit of titillation, look no further than a little game.
Cool. I think that's it. That's our 10 horror moments from our lives. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. Leave some, you know, comment, get in touch. Let us know what your terrifying horror moment memories are. It'd be nice to know. And happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Yeah. Okay, so this show is brought to you by the Story Studio Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Join the Horror Hangout Facebook group. It's called Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a horror dude.
Thank you, Luke Condor with a K.
Thank you very much. Right. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow-up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.